Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
To Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. A little bit about some of the accessibility features in this rebuilding project.
Absolutely. So the building was actually originally built to provide supported living for individuals with physical disabilities. So it has several rooms, have lift system in the ceiling, and automatic door openers. Our front entrance is automatic door openers. All of our bathrooms are accessible, as well as our offices, which is just amazing for Matthew House, because we have actually had to turn away refugees who've come to us seeking a safe home because our previous property was not accessible. So this facility will give us accessible office and program space and bathrooms, as well as we're preserving the accessible space in some of the bedroom units and apartments.
So when you discuss refugees, you got to figure a lot of these people are coming in, haven't had proper access to things like nutrition, healthcare, so a lot of them could potentially benefit from this work.
Definitely, and we're also going to be partnering with, there's a group of retired nurses who are going to be coming in and doing regular weekly health checks with our refugees. And we have ongoing partnerships with several other agencies who will be coming in to provide mental health check-ins and supports as well.
So can you tell me a little bit about what sparked you to want to do this rebuilding?
Matthew House, over the last 15 years, using our little three-bedroom home, has welcomed 634 men, women, and children. But unfortunately, we've had to turn away over 1,400 men, women, and children who came to us seeking a safe home to begin rebuilding their lives. So our board of directors really looked and for a property that would work well as the next home of Matthew House. And this property at 3185 Forest Glade Drive is really a game changer for our organization, in that we're going from a 1,000 square foot little three-bedroom ranch home to an 18,000 square foot building. But what's really neat about this facility is that it allows us to keep the home and family model that Matthew House has developed and uses in supporting the refugee claimants who come to us.
So how can the public get involved and lend a hand with this project?
We really need members of the public, students, faculty to come on board with us as volunteers. There's people who can clean, paint, do electrical, plumbing, wiring, but there's also people who can help with some of our administration. I need somebody to help me call and schedule volunteers for the project. We also, on an ongoing basis, need men and women who can be what we call Canadian friends. Basically, somebody to come alongside of our refugees when they first arrive in the country, maybe go out for coffee with them once a month, or have them over for dinner, or show them how to take the bus. You'd be amazed at how many of our men and women have no clue how to take the bus in Windsor, or don't know how to shop at a Canadian grocery store. So there's many ways that students and faculty can get involved with us in welcoming the stranger and welcoming the men, women, and children who come to us seeking safety and fresh start.
So, can you tell me a little bit about your hopes for the project? What do you think it'll do for the community as a whole?
I really hope and believe, and I think we're already seeing, that this project will open the eyes for some people in the community as to the good that refugee claimants bring. They're not coming to steal our jobs and steal our health care. No, they want to just very simply quickly rebuild their lives and become contributing members of our community. So we've had neighbors around our new facility show up and ended up working alongside of some of our refugee claimants in rebuilding this facility. And by the end of the time they were working together, I saw them laughing and joking and really developing positive relationships. And that's how understanding spreads. When you spend time with people you don't understand, people that you may be not trusting, which is the case for some people in regards to refugees. When you truly spend time with them and you get to know them as people, you begin to see that they truly are the same as you and that they just want to rebuild their lives. They want to bring positive to our community. And I could spend 3 hours in interviews with you telling you positive stories of men and women who are bringing positive change to our community. I mean, there's one gentleman who came from El Salvador about 4 years ago now, and he now owns his own contracting company with 3 trucks, 3 crews, and employs 18 guys. That's a business and economic power that happens in our community because a refugee claimant came and got the support that they needed to be able to thrive. And I want to see more of that happen. I want to see Canadian citizens look at the refugee claimants that Matthew House serves as an asset to our community.
So how can the public get involved? How can they get more information?
They can visit our website at MatthewHouseWindsor.org. That's Matthew with 2 T's, HouseWindsor.org. They can call our office at 519-945-7627 and press extension 2 for Patty. Or they can drop by the site between 9 a.m. and 7 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday at 3185 Forest Glade Drive. Finally, they can visit us on Facebook. I'd be remiss to not mention Facebook, but a lot of our information, especially our stories of what's going on in our build project and in the lives of our refugees, gets shared there. And I would really just encourage faculty and staff and others in community who are really interested in making a difference in people's lives that will allow them to thrive, to consider reaching out to Matthew House and joining us either on this renovation project or going forward as a Canadian friend or a volunteer in another way.
Like to thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely can.
In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Richard Brown from the Starkey Hearing Foundation. So tell me a little bit about the work of the Starkey Hearing Foundation.
Well, we're a nonprofit organization that has been tirelessly working to bring the gift of hearing people in the U.S. and around the world for over 30 years. We invest in changing people's lives through the gift of hearing.
So, are there any challenges in providing the gift of hearing?
Oh, there's all types of challenges. There's logistic challenges, finding people who are hearing impaired and need help. There is obviously raising enough money to go out and help people all around the world. There's finding enough volunteers to make the missions happen and happen smoothly. So there are hurdles, but we've been able to successfully overcome those hurdles.
So in your work, do you deal with all levels of hearing loss and all types of appliances to provide this, or...?
We do. We have a community-based hearing healthcare program, and the way that we're able to help large volumes of people is by our community-based program. And so to simplify it, there's like 10 different levels of hearing aids. And we're able to find one of those levels, if we're able to help someone, that they feel comfortable and that amplification helps them. Because everyone's different in how they absorb the hearing. It's like kind of going to the eye doctor. You know, they'll put the lens over your eye and say, is this better, is this better, is this better, until you find what's better. We do that with amplification and hearing devices.
So how do you go about spreading the word about the work you do?
Well, that's a great question. You know, we've given hearing aids away in over 100 countries. We actively have over 60-plus aftercare programs in different countries. We're in 64 different countries with aftercare programs. And we historically have had a gala that has allowed folks to come and participate and hear about it. But we also have, you know, social media and different avenues of allowing people to see the great work that we do all around the world.
So what's been the greatest success moment you've experienced with the foundation?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, there's been so many. I think I'm very, very proud that in less than 5 years, we've been able to have grown our aftercare programs into 64, you know, plus countries, so working our way this year towards 70. It's one thing to be able to identify people that have hearing loss and help them, but then, you know, when you leave, what happens? And that's very important to us, that when we leave, that there's a program there that will help them fix a broken hearing aid, or if one's uncomfortable, make it comfortable, or be able to get them more batteries. We want to be able to have this sustainable and have those lives changed for a long period of time.
So what are the next steps for the foundation?
Well, we're doing some incredible things. Last year, we worked with 6 different countries in helping them write hearing health care into their national plan. What that means is there's a lot of countries out there that they know it's a huge issue, they just don't know how to tackle it. And with the Starkey Hearing Foundation, we found a way to at least make a good dent in what's going on out there around the world. So by us getting the stakeholders together in these different countries and help co-authoring the national plan or putting hearing healthcare in their national plan, we're really starting to make some very large strides in helping people around the world through their governments that want to help them, that are just trying to find out how.
So if you could send any message to the community about why this work matters and why hearing is such a precious gift, what would you say?
Well, you know, hearing truly is a direct line to the heart. We find a lot of people who are elderly that become isolated. We find a lot of children who, with some amplification, would be able to be mainstreamed back into normal schools. These types of things are incredibly important to not only them, their families, their communities, but the world. That's where we're going now towards helping people. It's more about caring and sharing and realizing that people have issues, and our job in the hearing space at the Starkey Hearing Foundation is to give them hope, to give them the gift of hearing.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, sure.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Hey, University of Windsor students, do you have late classes? Are you new in town or just feel nervous or unsafe when walking alone? Download the Safe Lancer app and use FriendWalk. FriendWalk lets you send your location in real time to a friend so they make sure you get to your destination safely. If you or your friend suspects you are in danger, either of you can trigger a call to emergency services. When you reach your destination, finish your trip and disconnect safely. A message brought to you by the University of Windsor Campus Police Services. The Safe Lancer app is available for Android and Apple devices.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard about an accessible rebuilding project by Mike Morenci, and we heard a little bit about the Starkey Hearing Foundation from guest Richard Brown. In this segment of our show, we'll be talking about codependent relationships and addictions. And to talk about that, I'll be chatting with Sunil Bodai from Renaissance. So tell me a little bit about codependent relationships for addicts and the dangers therein.
So codependent relationships, an addicted person often gets into relationships with a codependent person because it's convenient and it allows them to continue using their substances. So codependents are the type of people who are looking to get into relationships in order to fix someone, right? A codependent is someone who's not willing to look at themselves in a relationship, but they're perfectly willing to live their lives trying to help someone else, therefore focusing on someone else's life. So for an addict, that's a perfect relationship as far as continuing the addiction. It allows them to continue to have someone to stick around to say that I'm not going to leave you, I'm going to continuously work on this relationship no matter what you do, right? So it's convenient for an addict. So for an addict, what it is it's the perfect enabler. A codependent in a relationship with an addict functions as the perfect enabler.
So might this be the case in which you have two addicts coming together into one relationship?
Yeah, I mean, you can have two addicts come into a relationship, and one of them being having the qualities or the types of behaviors that a codependent would have, right? But as far as codependency is concerned, a codependent is someone who is basically addicted to trying to fix someone or addicted to living someone else's life rather than their own. And that's what makes them a codependent.
So might this be an escapism, just living somebody else's life so they don't feel the pain or the hurts that they've experienced that led them to their own addiction?
Exactly, and I think that's exactly what it is. It's sort of not having developed certain skills that they needed to live their own lives, so they live vicariously through other people.
So someone in this sort of situation, the relationship is not healthy and they're not in a position to be making a rational judgment.
Exactly. A person in this type of relationship, it's absolutely not healthy. And those kinds of judgments that would be made within this relationship, it's usually affected by the needs of the addict, right? So it will always be in fulfillment of the need of the addict, and therefore it's a very dangerous type of relationship.
And how do people go about breaking the cycle? Is there any technique that can be used once a person acknowledges, I don't want to live this way anymore?
Yeah, so it's very similar to so a codependent is somebody who we can say is addicted to people rather than a substance, right? So the addict in this situation would be addicted to their substance, and the codependent would be addicted to trying to fix the person, addicted to the person and trying to fix them. So for a codependent, it functions very much the same way. It's about making yourself very, very aware of who you are and building your self-confidence and your self-esteem to know that you don't need the other person in order to define who you are, because that's what they do. By living someone else's life, they use that person and that person's problems to define everything that they're about. So they, they're the hero for trying to help this person to certain people, right? And they really love being the hero. Or they're somebody who is like constantly putting up with stuff and putting on a brave face, and certain people respect that, and that's the kind of thing that they respond to. So they have to become aware of all of those patterns of like how they find positive reinforcement through these behaviors and break it nonetheless, break those behaviors nonetheless. Become self-aware to realize that other people's opinions about how you're being a hero and how you're putting up with as many things as you are and you're still staying in the relationship, but none of that actually matters. What matters is day-to-day, if you're living, feeling happy and in a state of contentment, right? So they have to figure out how to get to that on their own rather than using someone else to get there.
So might a person with an identity disorder who doesn't feel complete on their own, who can't mm-hmm. perceive themselves outside a relationship, be more likely to get involved in such a situation?
Yeah, identity orders exist on their own, of course. But, I mean, someone with a certain type of identity order disorder might actually exhibit their personality traits very much the same way as a codependent, right? It would, in fact, someone with somebody with low self-esteem, say, right? So not necessarily a personality disorder, but with low self-esteem is one of those sort of breeding grounds. It happens as a fact of, say, some kind of mental health disorder, like even depression or anxiety. So based on the fact that they would have the mental health disorder and low self-esteem as a result, would become a codependent and get attached to these kinds of relationships.
So they'd want a relationship to say, look, I've got one, rather than looking at the quality of it, looking at what it really is.
Yeah, I think that is definitely one way that it can show up, right? That just to be in a relationship, just to feel fulfilled rather than because of the relationship, rather than being happy within the relationship is what would matter, right? The happiness, not so much, but just the fact that a relationship is there.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure, no problem.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Joan Lee from Vekova. So what can you tell me about Vekova?
Well, Vekova was, are you able to hear me okay? Vekova started in 1969, so we're actually celebrating our 50th anniversary this year. And it was really started by parents who really wanted something different for their sons and daughters other than institutional care. So looking at and thinking about living, working, playing, and connecting in with community. The thought behind Vekova was really around innovation, inclusion, and impact. And today that remains the same in everything that we've done and do here at the organization. Our programs still really focus on finding opportunities for all people to be included and have meaningful lives. We provide living support services in the community, so where anybody wants to live, we can go in and provide those supports. Employment services, we work with a whole range of employers in the Calgary region, finding employment opportunities for people with disabilities, and, you know, really promoting that living and working independently in the community. As well, we provide wellness services that focus on the mental, social, and physical well-being of a person or persons with disabilities. We have a barrier-free recreation center attached to us. We offer professional psychological services, counseling services, and training. And then we work with people with disabilities to gain access and become included as members of their communities in activities that they would like to do. So we also have a research team that works with us on doing social research and innovative practices. They focus on the best and promising practices and really looking at ways to find and solve the complex social issues that face our society and people with disabilities. Vekova also operates a number of social enterprises, which demonstrates our belief that we can have revenue-generating businesses that serve a social purpose. And what's unique to about Bukova is that we are also an employer of people with disabilities. So when we're working with employers in the community, we can talk about our experiences as an employer hiring people with disabilities and help to shape what other employers may need to do within their workforce.
So are there any challenges in the services you provide or the work that you do?
Certainly, and we could talk about, you know, the funding challenges and those kinds of things. I think what's unique about Bukova is that we look at challenges as our opportunities and thinking about different ways and being solution-focused on that. We look at opportunities as being a chance to be innovative and creative, which is core to how we implement our programs and think about our future. We consider what the adaptive cycle is of the organization to be able to respond and think differently. We know, of course, we're not exempt to some of the issues and impacts related to sustainability, such as, you know, the levels of funding that you need and the impacts that result from changes in the economy or legislation. But we know as an organization to be sustainable going into the future, we need to be adaptive and very agile. And that becomes our focus in thinking about and doing things differently. We don't look back and hope for a return of, you know, what was, or, you know, those were the good old days, or we had lots of funding at that time. Rather, we take a view that we look at our past and our experiences, we apply our learning from that, and then take a look at what we need to adapt as an organization to be agile and continue to make impact. So, again, you know, it's really about perspective and thinking about there are challenges. There's no question about that. There are barriers that sometimes seem very daunting. But flipping that around and taking a look at what is the opportunity that's existing here for us to be innovative, creative, and continue to make impact for people.
So, to look at the converse side of things, what's been the greatest success you've experienced in your time with Bukova?
Oh my gosh. As I say, it's our 50th anniversary, so we've had 50 years of successes. Continuing to be innovative and forward-thinking. We make impact on people's lives. I would say that is a huge success. But it's their personal story to tell. Each person receives services, and it impacts them all differently. And that is their story to tell of the success. For us, it's about being responsive to the need that makes the difference in other people's lives. So we've shaped services over the decades and thinking about disabilities. We're also changing and the conversation about disability and focusing on people's abilities, what they can do, not what they can't do. And that's a very subtle shift that needs to occur when we think about, you know, people with disabilities. It affects our design and our programming, and really our conversations with society. So, you know, every day I would say our employees are innovative and they work to make impact. You know, they're the backbone of our success as an organization, as is all our partners and collaborators and supporters that are our contributors. In short, we really value and rely on the connections we have. The successes, again, are the people's personal stories about what impacts their lives, but also what impact that we as an organization can have on, you know, influencing social policy, influencing and having discussions about legislation, improving the whole service delivery model for people with disabilities. So, you know, with 50 years of successes, there are many.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.